SCP-8000, the Seal of Approval. Nobel disease is a phenomenon in which a Nobel Prize-winning scientist endorses or otherwise is involved with pseudo-scientific areas after winning the prize for a legitimate scientific achievement. It's odd because scientists, especially those accomplished enough to win a Nobel Prize, should be able to easily separate legitimate science from pseudoscience. There's no clear reason as to why this phenomenon exists, but one possible reason is due to individuals such as this reaching a peak that they are highly unlikely to ever reach again, and then regressing back to a more even point. While some can accept that perspective, others might struggle during an inevitable downward slide. Today's SCP follows one Foundation director and his tumultuous downward slide, highlighted by a rather friendly talking seal. Let's take a look. The containment procedures for SCP-8000 are pretty simple, only stating that it is currently uncontained. And as for what it is, SCP-8000 is a gigantic, serpentine entity resembling a harbor seal, residing within Site-322. Its exact length is unknown, as its tail has never been located, but estimates range upwards to 150 meters. Instead of bounding, sliding, or swimming, it is capable of self-propelled flight along with phasing through solid objects, and precognition. It's also sapient, capable of speech, and highly intelligent, and can create temporary dimensional gateways at will. Certainly quite a laundry list of anomalous traits, and it's hypothesized that it has been connected to baseline reality from an unknown extra-dimensional location, but the method or reason it exists in present reality has not been discovered. For the real kicker, as of the writing of this documentation, SCP-8000 is one of two living beings on Earth. We're given a log of a conversation between Director Paul Legge of Site-322 and SCP-8000. Legge barges into a meeting space, looking intently at a report, and begins speaking before realizing that SCP-8000 is seated across the table. The seal greets him enthusiastically as Mr. Paul, but Legge is only extremely confused and asks if it's a seal. The seal remarks that that's an astute observation and asks what he has going on that he was talking about, but Legge doesn't remember, stating that he thinks he had a meeting. The seal then says that it's happening again, the thing, the memory thing, but it's no bother, and it usually works around it. Legge is still extremely confused, and the seal admits that it's being rather vague, but it promises him that as long as he's honest with it, it will be honest with him. Legge, however, remarks that that's not very fair, as he has no reason to believe that its version of honesty is honest. The seal replies that it knows he has that self-proclaimed sixth sense when it comes to talking weirdos, and it likes to think that it slots nicely into that subsection of wacky doodads he intakes here. Legge says that it's aware that he takes those wacky doodads and locks them in cages, often permanently. And the seal knows that, and that he also does tests and writes reports and makes chambers, but that won't be necessary. It's done the research and documentation on itself for him, and it nudges over the SCP-8000 documentation. Legge asks why it chose the 8000 slot, but the seal replies that it didn't, as that was out of its hands. Legge then asks if it has a tail, and although the seal questions why that's his biggest concern, it says that it's never seen its tail, so it wouldn't confirm something it has no evidence of. Legge says that it could just slither through here and he can confirm whether it has a tail, but the seal takes offense, stating that it floats daintily and whimsically. Lag moves on, asking who took the picture in the document, showing the seal in the center of a library, and the seal replies that he does in about 6 or 7 minutes. Lag is still confused, and the seal asks him if he ever runs into issues where he masters something and assumes that everyone understands what he does. Lag replies that that happens often, every day even, and the seal says that its job is somewhat of an intervener of sorts. It humbly requests him to spend one day with it, and although he takes that picture, so he knows the answer already, it can't force him, as that would be rude and mean. Lag asks if they're just going to spend the day in his office, to which the seal makes a biting motion, latching onto the air and gripping the space with its jaw before tearing a rip into present reality. It then flies through and peeks its head back out towards Lag, saying that it's right through here and it's very cozy. Lag tells it to hold on, and the seal already knows what he's going to say about how can he ever trust it. It tells him to ask it whatever he wants, and it will be truthful. It then raises its right flipper and it swears on those magazines that he keeps hidden in his desk drawers. Lag swears at it before asking if it's going to kill him or eat him, to which it jokes that its craving for human flesh has long since passed. Lag then asks about torturing him for millions of years, or burning his family alive in front of him, or driving him to insanity over and over again, which the seal all refers to as being gratuitous and reckless. Lag then says that he doesn't know what he's supposed to do here, and the seal repeats that it'd just like to spend the day with him. It's going to go into this rift very slowly, and these things don't stay open long, as well as being a real pain in the flipper to open again. It asks him to please save them both the trouble, and he wouldn't want to create a paradox by not taking the picture he just saw. It then re-enters the gateway, and Lag stares at it as the edges of the tear slowly repair itself. We're then given a recovered document from February 13th, 2024, containing a transcript of a meeting between Lag and Ethics Committee liaison Jeremiah Samarian regarding his behavior as Site-322's director. Samarian asks him how he thinks he's been doing, to which Lag just says that the fact that Samarian is here isn't a confidence booster. He replies that they consider themselves friends, and after an awkward pause, Lag just says, okay. And so Samarian cuts to the chase. Lag has missed 12 of the last 14 O4 meetings. His site's overall productivity has plummeted over the last 3 months. He has 16 different complaints here about an odor of trash and shame originating from Lag's office, and people have been telling him that Lag's sleeping during working hours. He asks Lag if he denies any of those claims, and Lag doesn't, but says that maybe he's suffering from burnout, or maybe he's just in a lull. He's not sure if he's depressed or not, but he sits down in his chair, does whatever paperwork he needs to do for the day, assigns whatever projects are left over, and stares at the screen until he can go back home. He's bored, as everything is boring. Samarian remarks that this is probably stemming from a bigger issue, which Lag thinks is quite obvious, and he asks when this started. Lag says that he was researching this anomaly, which he can't even be bothered to remember, and he sat there looking at this BS file of a BS anomaly and felt that it was all for nothing. Samarian says that it happens, and he's dealt with a lot of people experiencing the same issues, although 8 years as a director is a bit quicker than usual. Lag insists that there's no point in whining, and he'll pick up the slack, but Samarian tells him to share his feelings, as he's here to help. Lag, however, continues to insist that there's no point, although he appreciates it, and he just needs a second to get himself together before getting back to it. Samarian tells him that this meeting wasn't meant to kick him in the ass and magically make him love this job again, they just need him to return to the same level of work that he used to. Lag assures him that he wants more, but he can't find it, so why try? Back in the present, Lag and SCP-8000 exit the gateway into the study of a vast library, with hundreds of thousands of books seated on dark, mahogany shelves, which stretch far beyond view in the distance and towards the ceiling. The air is still, with a hint of the smell of ash and old paper, and small orbs of light dance around the shelves, illuminating the tomes and hallways. Lag remarks that he's been to the Wanderer's Library before, but the seal says that this is its library, and those carnies got the Infinite Library from it, and in turn, it borrowed it from Alexandria. The two walk out of the study through stone archways wrapped in ivy and vines, and Lag says that he thinks he would have heard of a third library of this sort by now. The seal replies that it dislikes publicity, so it keeps it to itself, but it's not exactly its library, it's Lag's. They approach an archway with the words Memory Lane engraved into its keystone, and they proceed through into a subsection of the hallway. The seal explains that this holds every experience, every moment, every bit of knowledge, and every emotion. It's a map of Lag. He asks how in-depth this is, and the seal says that his piano muscle memory is up there, but very dusty, and there's 4 volumes on his childhood expertise in all things shark and shark-related, as well as every moment of every elementary school class he sat through. Lag repeats the question, and the seal says that it's read everything, and it doesn't judge. And when Lag begins to question something, the seal soars up out of view and grabs a dusty book from a shelf, dropping it to Lag. He reads a section from when he was 8 years old at a public pool, and he was pushing himself underwater repeatedly with the bottom bar of a ladder in the pool. He suddenly found the inside of his swim shorts wrapped around the ripped stopper at the bottom of the bar, preventing him from breaching the surface. Panicked, he continues to try and pull himself out until he unties his shorts and swims out of them. 2 girls, one that he had romantic feelings for, observed the entire incident and stared at him. Lag gasps for air and touches his chest and arms, exclaiming on how real that felt. The seal replies that he was there before, so it placed him back so he could relive it. Lag pleads with it for it to tell him what they're doing here, to which it says that they're here for his memories of failure. There are many, more than most people somehow, and Lag replies that he'd rather let it drown him again. In another recovered document from the day after Lag's meeting with Sumerian, Sumerian gathered several of Lag's close colleagues, believing that it would alleviate his current disposition. When Lag enters, he remarks incredulously that he's come to an intervention, even though Sumerian assures him that it's not an intervention. Lag slumps into the empty chair in the middle of the room, grumbling to himself, and Sumerian says that they want to discuss his career and his emotional state, with several of them having prepared statements. Dr. Cole Theravin goes first, reading from a crumpled piece of paper about how sorry he is for the loss of Lag's pet dog in a violent car accident. Sumerian begins to correct him, but Lag interrupts him and says that he appreciates it, although it's noted that Lag did not and does not own a dog. Dr. Anthony Kwa then goes, explaining that he needed some documents looked at and signed by Lag last week, but he found them a few hours later under a book written by a pickup artist, and he had to stay overtime for 5 days to do the necessary edits. On top of that, he had to fill in for him at 6 separate meetings where he wasn't going to show up, and didn't get paid overtime for them. It turns out that he didn't get overtime because of SCP-5595, also present in the meeting, a sapient gumball machine that works in Site-322's accounting department, which tends to be rude and boisterous. It was Lag's decision to put it there, which another director comments was probably not the finest idea. Lag gets into an argument with him, in which he quickly leaves the meeting, slamming the door behind him. Dr. Harold Blank then goes, stating that for the last 8 years, LAG has been very independent, with only the rare call or email asking for a once-over on whatever report he's filing. More recently, though, he's become much less confident, needing to break down his methodology and philosophy instead of just doing it. Blank says that he's a smart kid, and he should start acting like it. Lag takes offense, asking if he's not allowed to ask for advice now, and if he's supposed to just sit here and take this, but Cimmerian assures him that no one's attacking him. Blank continues, saying that the fact of life is that there will be peaks and valleys. Lag thinks that he reached a very, very high peak, and now he's back to a regular old valley, and he's not used to it because it's low in comparison. It's not the end of the world unless he lets it be. Director Randall House then speaks, taking a different approach, calling him a whiny bitch. He works in literal hell, and he'd love the respite of researching something easy and chill every once in a while. It's annoying. Lag is being annoying, and he's seen this downward spiral happen 1,000 times. People have their qualms, but 99% of the time it's someone whining because they think they're not good enough, and he's tired of this victim mentality. He tells Lag to grow his self-confidence back and stop whining. Lag then counters by laying into House before standing up and saying that he'll get his life back by himself. After leaving, Cimmerian congratulates the others on the great work they did. In the present, Lag comments that he saw the seal's tail for a second when it went into the portal, despite the seal saying that that would be impossible. Lag asks if all of it is inside of this library, which it says it is, and then it sees his point and asks what its tail looked like. Lag just says that it looked like a normal seal tail, so it says that it will update the documentation. It then begins to fly rapidly from shelf to shelf, retrieving a myriad of books, stating that these represent his childhood. The two appear in a child's bedroom with dark blue walls, and multiple trophies from Little League sports victories line a bookcase opposite the bed. Lag strolls through and excitedly grabs a Batman comic book off of the nightstand and flicks through the pages, stopping at the inside of the back cover. He explains that he used to draw his own Batman comics in the back of the books, and made dozens of them, maybe hundreds. He loved it, and before marine biologist and president, he wanted to do line art for comics. He got a bunch of those how-to-draw comic books, and even though they never really helped other than giving you something to trace, it was cool nonetheless. He just stopped one day, though, and he doesn't remember why. He then exclaims as he sees a child, around 6 or 7 years old, slumped against the bed, silently crying, with several crumpled up drawings strewn around him. The seal explains that he can't see him, as that would cause a paradox, and mentions him stopping his drawings. Lag wishes that he didn't, even though it was a pipe dream. A woman then barges into the room, looking around, before sitting next to the child and asking him what's wrong. The child exclaims that it's not good, and the woman tells him that if he works himself up like this, he'll never be happy with anything. The child replies that he quits, however, and he'll just be a fish doctor and never draw again. The woman tells him that she'll support him in whatever he decides to be, and she's not sure where she's getting the money to pay for marine biology college, but if that's what he wants to do, she supports it. Lag comments that that was the day he stopped, he thinks. Now that he looks again, it's not that bad for a 6-year-old, and he guesses that he was just a brat. The seal asks why he didn't stick with it, to which Lag says that the odds of him doing anything that mattered in that job were slim to none. He wanted to be the next Jack Kirby or Stan Lee, but that was never going to happen. His dad worked in scouting for college football, and he would always talk about these athletes he watched. They were the best in their high school of 300 kids, but he knew the second those kids stepped onto a college field, they were in the lowest percentile of real skill. He was never, ever wrong. The SEAL asks if he thinks his dad is right about that, as it's a bleak outlook on life to continually diminish the skills of yourself and others. Lag says that he would always say stuff like that whenever Lag got some new interest. He'd always manage to bring it up in conversation the next day. The SEAL understands that his father was talking about him, and says that his standards are what he makes them. Lag counters that that has never been true in the history of humankind. The view then shifts to Lag sitting at a desk in a quiet, cold room, 16 years old, surrounded by other teenagers also taking a standardized test. It shifts again to him sitting across from his mother, and he opens a manila envelope, stating that he got a 1520. His mother exclaims and congratulates him, but he just says that he's trying to get into a good school, and 1520 doesn't cut it, despite being in the 99th percentile. He says that three of his friends got above 1540s, although his mother wonders if one of them cheated, and says that he's being ridiculous, as it's all in the 99th percentile of scores. Lag insists that it's not good enough, but his mother says that she's been dealing with this attitude for his entire life, and he should be happy for himself once, as she's proud of him. Lag comments that he was right in the end, as he didn't get into the Ivies, but the SEAL remarks that he switched majors in college 5 times, from computer engineering, to graphic design, to culinary arts, to mechanical engineering, in 1.5 years. The view shows Lag sitting on the ground of his dorm room, crying, with a physics book open to a section about elasticity. Lag swears and says that he figured it out with biology in the end, and he graduated on time. The SEAL asks why he didn't stick with his other choices, and when Lag says that the concepts were impossible to understand, it says that he works for the Foundation. He's smart. After a pause, Lag says that it wasn't groundbreaking. He was studying the work of much more successful people to graduate and become a cog in a machine based on those successful people's discoveries. There was no upward or downward movement, just stuck in a corporation, and he couldn't do it. Maybe he self-sabotaged, and he knows his advisor hated him by the 3rd switch, but he couldn't force himself into that life. The SEAL says that he wanted to leave a mark, and Lag asks if that's a crime. In another recovered document from a few days after the intervention, Lag authorized a project proposal to be presented to the Overseer Council entitled Project Seeker. It's described as a paratechnological device that utilizes a localized wormhole and quantum computing to search for undiscovered anomalies. In conjunction with its wormhole, its artificial intelligence system can predict an undiscovered anomaly's location, classification, and abilities based on the timelines and experiences of 35 million parallel Earths. Users can input several parameters, specifying what anomalies Seeker should scan for and the number of parallel realities it should search, and it will return the best result, providing the factors causing the anomaly's manifestation in parallel universes and its location on Earth. It certainly sounds pretty useful, but in a transcript of the presentation to the O5 Council, they definitely don't seem impressed. O5-2 says that they failed to see a need to spend billions of the Foundation's money on a theoretical tool that does something that they already do, aside from satiating his ego. O513, a photocopier, comments that big machines are all the rage nowadays, prompting a discussion among the O5s about big machines and how much money they cost and how they're always ruining reality or killing gods. O55, extremely cheerfully, says that it's a grand idea, but they're wondering about the intention here, as they read a report from Sumerian over at the Ethics Committee that said Lag has a small case of the blues. Lag asks if those discussions are supposed to be confidential, but 057 replies that they're not governed by the draconic rules of HIPAA. Lag says that he wasn't doing well, but that's for personal reasons, and after evaluating himself and considering why, he poured himself into creating this project so that his site and him will consistently be at the forefront of interesting new research. 052 comments that they have anomaly detection planted on every inch of this planet, and he wants them to uproot that. Lag, however, says that this is a different initiative, for future predictions. The anomaly detection system they have is top of the line, he can't deny that, but that's real time, whereas this would show them when, where, and why anomalies pop up before they even do. There's nothing like it. Afterwards, speaking with Dr. Kwa, Lag says that the meeting went well, and they bought it. Kwa calls it the insecurity machine, but Lag prefers the grab-your-life-back-by-the-balls machine. Kwa says that maybe he knows him too well, but if he can see past that thin veneer, he thinks that the council could too. Lag agrees that they definitely saw through it. After a pause, Kwa asks what he did, to which Lag says that he didn't consult with Site-17's deep well, and he sure didn't make this an anomaly detection system. He lied. In the present, Lag asks the seal how it would like it if he analyzed it, to which it replies that there was never a rule that said he couldn't ask questions. He asks it its name, but it says that it doesn't have one, and it doesn't remember why, as it's been a while since anyone's even broached that subject. Lag comments that it seems like a William, or more of a Bill, as the name pops into his head whenever he sees bald things. The seal counters that it's covered in hair, but Lag says that it looks bald, and then suggests maybe Greg, or Frankie. The seal then says that it remembers now why it never picked a name, as it wouldn't have been taken seriously if it showed up and said, "Hello, Mr. Paul, I am Frankie." Lag replies that it's an incredibly long seal, so it should play into the ridiculousness of that scenario, but the seal prefers the unrequited cosmic humor of the tonal disparity between what it does and its coincidental resemblance to a rather dopey mammal. Lag demands that it picks a name for itself, but it instead just comments on how interesting this is. It finds that Lag has a rather obsessive personality that never seems to be sufficed, and his obsession for perfection led him to quit his art as an adolescent. He does this for most activities, academic, recreational, or otherwise, if he even sniffs a hint of potential adversity within his rise. It then retrieves a nearby book, which contains a section about Lag playing for his university's intramural basketball league. At the end of the game, Lag missed a pass, allowing the ball to bounce to the other team, who scored and won. Lag then left, missing the post-game meeting, and didn't show up for the next practice. Lag exclaims that that one is fair, as it was just embarrassing. The seal says that he can downplay those events as much as he pleases, but they were very influential in regard to who he is now. He lost a single game and quit, and the seal asks if the embarrassment was that bad. Lag says that looking in the face of his teammates after he went butterfingers on an easy game winner is pretty embarrassing. The seal asks why he's so averse to embarrassment, as it's a normal part of life. But Lag counters that the seal is a hypocrite, as it won't even consider having a name because it's afraid of what people will think about it once they hear it. The loss was on no one else but him. He couldn't put his art into the world because it wasn't good enough for anyone else to look at, and he was pissed about not getting into an Ivy League school because how is anyone else supposed to know that he's smart enough to be there? He's not going to let others think they're better than him as long as he can do something about it. The seal remarks that that's it, and although Lag sarcastically admits that it got him, he still thinks the seal is a hypocrite. The seal then states that its name is Wallace, or Wally for short. It's Wallace, and it always has been, but he's still stuck in that position he's trapped himself in. It hopes that he'll see that it's trying to help him. We're then given an abridged catalog of anomalies discovered by Lag's Seeker machine, starting with a chimerical humanoid anomaly resembling a green, rotund avian wearing a Philadelphia Phillies uniform and located at the home field for the Phillies baseball team. It is sentient, sapient, and capable of speech, and in an interview with it by Lag, it says that its book explains everything about it. It's from the Galapagos Islands, and it met Charles Darwin. It's been spreading anti-evolution rhetoric for 70 years, and it forced Darwin not to write about it because it said that it would eat him. When Lag asks why he would believe it, it says that it ate his assistant, and eating people is probably its favorite thing to do. When it says that it mostly likes to hunt and eat children, and the hot dogs in its hot dog gun are made from people meat, Lag assumes that it's just trying to get a reaction out of him. He says that he finds it far-fetched that it's a living creature that looks like that, that's almost 200 years old, and it eats people. It replies that it finds it far-fetched that he doesn't think it will eat him. Another anomaly is located in the Everglades in Florida, being a humanoid anomaly capable of translocation through the space-time continuum. In an interview, he says that he likes to teleport and can also time travel. When asked if he's done anything of note with that, he remarks on why child mortality was bad when there were knights and kings and stuff. His explanation is that he travels back in time to eat kids. Afterwards, Lag gathers the engineers that worked on the machine and yells about the machine just pumping out cannibals. One engineer guesses that the AI heavily associates cannibalism with the dangerous tag, which Lag had put in to find dangerous anomalies. Lag says that maybe he should have been more specific to them, as this machine isn't meant to find something you can just shove in a locker and call it a day. The chief engineer argues that that wasn't in the specifications, but Lag yells at him to read between the lines. This project represents billions of dollars, and it represents him, so he needs to show that this can find a world-ending threat before it causes any damage. Dr. Kwa asks who said that he needs to find a world-ending threat, but Lag just says that he needs to find it, and he won't sit here with a billion-dollar piece of paratech that will just spit out the baby-eating Tickle Me Elmo. He asks his chief engineer what the ceiling is on how many universes the machine can scan, to which he says about 35 million. Lag tells him that he needs that number bumped up, but the engineer calls him crazy and says the whole thing would need to be reassembled. Technically, and maybe, he can move that number up to 40, but Lag asks what the limit is. The chief engineer tells him that there isn't one, but the stabilization on the machine could go wrong, so he's not changing it. Lag just says that he has no problem with that. And when Dr. Kwa tells him to wait a second before he does something stupid, as he failed out of engineering, Lag just tells him to start learning Polish. In the present, Wally retrieves a number of leather-bound books, all emblazoned with the SCP Foundation's logo, and he remarks that Lag has been a site director for 8 years now, being reasonably young for one as well. He climbed up the ranks fairly quickly, mostly due to his friendships with people that mattered. Lag comments on that being a real confidence booster, but Wally is stating facts. He wasn't unqualified, but he only got those qualifications due to the opportunities people like Miss Moose or Mr. McInnes provided. Lag counters that anyone could have been in his same spot. No one forced him to do the work he needed to do, and no one else was in a position to be director when he was picked. He was in the right place at the right time. Wally reminds him of their honesty pact, and brings up a conversation between him and Dr. Kwa in 1993, in which Lag complains about Director House getting his own site, with him being 2 years younger than Lag is. Kwa's not sure why he's so upset, as Lag is a senior researcher at 25, and it took him until he was 34 to even sniff a project he could call his own, let alone a senior title. Lag says that he's been in a one-sided war with House since he joined the Foundation, and he has the biggest leg up on him now. Kwa swears and says that he's impossible sometimes. He tells him to get it together and do the mountain of paperwork in his office, as sitting here and complaining won't make him an overseer. Lag tells Wally that he was a kid then, and he was jealous. Wally asks if House wasn't a friend of his, and Lag says that he was, and he never hated him, as he's been a mentor to him since he started. Wally comments that he was so hateful during that moment, and Lag asks what's wrong with him, as he thought he should have been made a director first. He thought it would erase every single insecurity he has, and if he beat House to the punch, no one would be able to look at him like he wasn't meant to be here. Wally says that he got his own sight eventually, but Lag feels like it was a consolation prize. He then swears and asks what he's doing to himself. Wally asks if his own sight wasn't good enough, and Lag says that it was, or it should have been. He wanted to do something important, make something that he could put his name at the top of. His entire life, he's been just one single step behind, and all he ever wanted was to get even the smallest bit of recognition. Wally asks him if he thinks it's a bit ridiculous to believe that an organization in charge of the utmost security and safety of the universe would give someone a sight as a consolation prize. He then flips to another page, showing a conversation between Lag and SCP-5595, the Sapient Gumball Machine. He tells the machine that one of his junior researchers decided to get the flu today, and no one else can fill in on this boring project, an anomalous item log entry for a toaster that replaces the bread you put in with different types of bread. The machine hopes that he views that anomaly as being inferior to itself, and when Lag asks when did it get so insecure, it just says that it emulates him. Lag remarks that he can't believe he's sitting here typing this up, as he's a director, so this shouldn't be his work for the day. The machine counters by asking if he's ever led anyone in his life. His job is to pick up the scraps when the rest of the mice can't eat them all. They don't pay him to sit around and only do work when the world is about to explode. Wally says that he got what he was hunting for, and it's still not good enough. Lag says that he can't do this anymore, and wants to stop, as he gets what he's trying to tell him. Wally asks if he's sure, as he said he wanted recognition, but he is recognized. He was already successful before he became site director, reaching a very high rank at a very young age, but that wasn't good enough, so he pushed further. When he became site director, the responsibility that came with it wasn't what he expected. It was fine for a time, because the novelty hadn't worn off. Lag counters that the recognition doesn't matter if the hunt turns him into the world's biggest asshole. He's at a ceiling. He has everything he wanted since he was a kid, and it's still not enough. What's there to even reach from here, as there's nothing above that? Wally admits that he's right, there isn't much more to reach for, but despite that, he'll try to reach for it regardless. We're given another couple seeker entries, including a sapient humanoid resembling common depictions of cowboys in media, and comprised entirely of spaghetti. In the interview, Lag demands to know what his deal is, to which the anomaly says that he's sure in a hurry to get nowhere fast, and introduces himself as Spaghetti Jones, along with his horse, Ricky Tony. Lag asks what he does, to which he says that he goes where the wind takes him, which is a peaceful life. Lag then asks what he eats, to which he just says, food, and says his favorite food is a nice, juicy steak. Lag asks if he means from a cow, to which Spaghetti Jones says that he doesn't believe they make steak of any other creature. Lag then says that he's just a guy made out of spaghetti, and he thinks it's 1870, surprising him to hear that it's not 1870. Lag asks if he were him, and he was looking for something amazing, would he be happy if he found himself? Spaghetti Jones says that he's happy with himself, and thinks he's a nice guy, and Ricky Tony's a sweet fella too. He, in turn, asks Lag if he's happy with himself, but Lag just says that he's not happy that a billion-dollar piece of tech found him. He tells him that he's not good enough, and he's sorry, to which Spaghetti Jones says that as rude as he was, he hopes he has a swell evening, before bowing his head along with his horse and riding off. Another anomaly is a sapient Tickle Me Elmo toy located in a residential home in New York City. Its sapience can only be observed after a direct attempt at conversation combined with a tickling motion on its abdomen. Lag asks if it eats kids and tickles it, prompting it to laugh and say no, asking him if he's sick in the head. Lag replies that it's been a long few days and tickles it again. It laughs and says it doesn't know what monster would eat kids, as Elmo sticks to the adults, since they have much more meat. Lag is ordered to an emergency meeting with Dr. Samarian, which begins with Lag saying that there's not a single thing he can say to him that won't piss him off. He's done this all alone for the past month, as Samarian wanted him to do the work he needed to do, so he's looking for the most dangerous anomalies they don't have contained, and containing them. Samarian replies that he's found 25 anomalies, most of which have a taste for human flesh. Lag swears and exasperatedly says that this is how basic science works, and he's working on it. Before he was forced into this meeting, he was almost done with the remaining adjustments. Samarian asks him what he wants to find exactly, such as a god. Lag replies that that wouldn't be the worst thing. Samarian asks if he'll contain it himself as well, and says that he needs to reevaluate this whole situation. Lag says that he's on the cusp of solving every single issue he has in his life, but Samarian has met with the engineers, who are convinced that if he goes over the 1 billion universes mark, it will end very, very badly. He has a ticking time bomb in his sight, and he asks if he understands the danger he's putting himself and others in. Lag just says that he's done after today, as he's changed some parameters, and it's going to give him exactly what he's been looking for. Later, he calls a meeting with all Site 322 personnel in order to display the next anomaly discovered by the Seeker machine. He tells them that today he finds his crowning achievement, and the anomaly that this machine discovers today will not be a cannibal, but instead will be his, and their, magnum opus. This was a lot of work, far too much, some could say, but he's calibrated Seeker perfectly. Qua interrupts to say that this thing is going to explode, but Lag asks if he has to be so dark. Everything is all set up, the parameters are in, and he even reconfigured the stabilization to account for the wormhole. The chief engineer exclaims, but before he can say anything else, Lag pushes a button, and the camera feed dies. Lag and Wally journey into the darkest part of the hall, where the orbs of golden light are absent, instead replaced by small, dim lights resembling floating shards of glass. Wally tells him that this hasn't happened yet, as he plucked him out before it did, but he has made the decisions that led him to where they are now. The shelves grow more and more empty, as Wally says that all of this will happen should he release him now and let him go alone. He asks if Lag remembers the meeting before he stepped in, but Lag doesn't remember any of the details. Wally is always curious as to why that happens to his weary travelers. They approach a final shelf, with immense emptiness filling the void beyond it. A single book lays on the shelf, white with no back cover, as it appears to have been burnt away. The book recaps the events we've been reading about. A discussion with a worried friend, a half-baked intervention, a project proposal, dishonesty to the Overseer Council, a man's bold-faced obstinance and belief he's the only one who can solve himself. Four creatures who don't reach the unreachable standard. A man's stubborn qualities flare in the face of the last person who reaches out. And an avoidable mistake. Lag and Wally appear in a crater along the bank of a gated river, with crystalline shards lying around them, as well as chunks of concrete, rebar, and glass. The air is hot and smells of sulfur, and Lag looks around at his surroundings with palpable fear growing on his face. Wally asks if he knows where they are, and Lag does, but he asks what happened. Wally explains that the Seeker machine had a meltdown and collapsed in on itself. Wormholes are a fickle thing, highly unstable, but he built it up to withstand a lot. He managed to push past that boundary with his obsessive search for glory and put in some combination of parameters that didn't exist in any known universe, something so specific and impossible that it cracked. His sight is gone, his people are gone, and he is gone. Lag paces around, finding tattered clothing and lab equipment, splinters of wood that once belonged to his desk, and his keycard lanyard buried in the mud. Lag says that Wally said this will happen, and Wally replies that in the timeline where he didn't meet him, it did. Lag asks if he stopped it, but Wally didn't stop anything. His attention was drawn towards him because of this tragedy, but he sees death and destruction every day. It almost all deals with groups of people making decisions with some form of history that he could look at and maybe understand their reasoning, but he said that Lag was a unique case. He looked through his history, hoping to find some sort of triggering event that could explain what happened, but there wasn't one. Every step of the way, he ignored his better judgment and the advice of others, letting his worst tendencies smolder into an uncontrollable blaze, and it caused this. Lag pleads to put him back, as he can fix this, and he knows that he can fix this. Wally says that he thought maybe he could stop it if he intervened right as Lag jumped into the deep end and brought him back over the edge. Cimmerian was his last lifeline, so starting there felt only natural. He's tried, but Lag is stubborn and has been unreceptive to everything he's tried to show him. Lag replies that he understood it all. He's an asshole who can't look in the mirror, but he is who he is. He'll never be satisfied, and that's the way it is. Wally says that that way of thinking has only led him to where they are now. Lag complains that he can't fix this alone, but Wally says that he can. He needs to reflect upon himself. He has success, but he needs to appreciate it. Lag asks how can he possibly fix this, and Wally says that he saw a kid who didn't believe in himself become a man who couldn't cope with the thought that no one else would believe in him. Despite all of that, look at him now, as Wally draws a Batman logo in the sand with a flipper. Lag's eyes well with tears, and Wally repeats that he's not in the business of cruelty, so they'll leave this place. The two return to the library, where the air feels more still, and the shards of light have dissipated, leaving them in almost total darkness. Lag says that he's not happy with himself, and he never has been. He can't let this happen, as he wasn't made for this, and Wally tells him that most of them aren't, but we all find our way. Lag says that he can't let all that work and time be for nothing, and can't let everything he's worked for be rendered a crater in the middle of nowhere. He can't be this hollow shell smiling through problems he made for himself. Wally asks if he trusts himself, but Lag just asks what's wrong with him as the shelves begin to rattle violently, causing books to fall off and plunge to the floor. Wally tells him that he may have his issues, but he has the ability to fix all of this. Lag laments that he made a life and friends there, and everything he's ever worked for was in that building. That was his success, but he spent more time crying that he couldn't look himself in the mirror instead of what he did. The ground below the two rumbles, and the flooring cracks as if struck by a large force. More books fall to the floor behind them, sounding like hail. The vines and foliage lining the shelves sway as if they're being blown by hurricane-level winds. Wally asks him again if he trusts himself, but Lag says that he can't live like this anymore. He's tired of feeling like he's never good enough. He can't look at someone else being happy and feel awful instead of happy with them. He's good enough, and has always been good enough. Suddenly, the empty shelves behind Lag burst with light, and the rumbling stops. The books float back up to the shelves, and the foliage returns to its regular state, although the crack in the flooring beneath Lag remains. Wally asks a third time if he trusts himself, and this time Lag says that he does, and he can fix this. The previously empty shelves are now filled with hundreds of white books of varying sizes and shapes, and Lag looks at them in awe. Wally explains that these are unwritten memories, as his life doesn't end prematurely anymore. Now he can return to his home, to his friends, and to his work. He can succeed in his own way and fill these books. Lag asks if everything is determined then, but Wally replies that these are empty books to be written and filled with the choices he may make. He may return and disregard every bit of advice and knowledge he's given him, and these books will vanish once more. Or he can return and give Wally some more reading to catch up on. It's all up to him. Lag then finds himself back in the last meeting with Cimmerian, exclaiming in surprise, causing Cimmerian to call him manic. Cimmerian continues his planned remarks, however, stating that he's worried for him and he seems unfit for this position. He's worried for the safety of everyone in this site, and moreover, Lag's safety. Lag just says that he knows, and he's right, surprising Cimmerian. He asks him for the last time to just tell him what's going on, and after hesitating, Lag admits that he should have listened to him. He's sorry that he pushed it all away, from everyone. All his life he's been trapped in this cycle of jealousy and insecurity, and has only gotten out of it because of the people who genuinely cared for him. Cimmerian replies that he's not going to sit here and pretend he was expecting this, at which point Lag starts going into his encounter with the seal and the library, only serving to confuse Cimmerian even more. Lag admits that this whole problem for him started after he finished his 001 proposal, the ones that got away, and Cimmerian remarks that that's a big achievement, and as far as he was told, Lag was happy with it. Lag says that he was happy, it's his crowning achievement, and he got it all done up and published, but that was it. It was well received by his peers and colleagues, he got the stamp of approval from the council, and he went through hell to get it done. The second he hit that publish button, he was on top of the world, but then it was just over. He was back to the real world, stuck in the regular monotonous schlub work. Cimmerian says that he must understand that not everything he's going to work on will be these major projects, and Lag says that he gets that now, but it felt like it was only downhill from there. He felt like he reached the peak of his research 8 years into his spot as a director, and couldn't shake that sense of all-encompassing dread. They have people in the Foundation who are immortal, and he couldn't imagine that the rest of his life, or a prolonged life, could be spent chasing a high that might never come again. Regardless of whatever he considers a major project, something like a proposal being published sets a new standard and expectations, and he couldn't reach them. It was like the day-to-day tasks, the things that were stepping stones into these large accomplishments, became a never-ending loop and reminder that he wasn't there anymore. Responsibilities came back, and all it did was remind him that this major achievement was just a brief pause, and he couldn't cope with it. Samarian understands, and Lag isn't the only person to experience that feeling. Lag just says that he realized that it was never his proposal, as he didn't solve anything. The only reason he managed to get anything successful out of it was because everyone here stood behind him and believed he had something tangible. They were the ones who worked on the containment procedures with him, the ones who calmed his nerves when he thought he was going to lose this job, and the ones he's been ignoring this whole last month. He wishes he saw it sooner. Samarian tells him that he has the chance to fix that now, and Lag says that he knows. He knows he'll never be able to get rid of that feeling, as he's had it his entire life, and it's brought him to heights he never could have imagined. He couldn't see the self-destruction that came with it, the lost relationships, the time wasted, the all-encompassing feeling of things never getting better. He can cope with that, as he's done it from day one, but he let it break him for the first time. It can't happen again, and he won't let it. Samarian tells him that at the end of the day, disregarding all the politics and stuff they put on each other and themselves, your standards are what you make them. Lag says that he knows, and he doesn't have to say that to him ever again. Lag orders all Site 322 personnel to a meeting, but this time begins by stating that he knows that he was an asshole, and he messed up bad. He's sorry, and he knows all of them had his best interest at heart. He's been in his own head and made it everyone else's problem for the sole reason that he could. That's not a leader. Dr. Kwa comments that as much as they all appreciate that, the machine is still incredibly unstable. Lag says that he has no idea how unstable it is, but they're going to be okay. He begins to mention the seal, but thinks better of it, and just says that they're going to fix this together. The chief engineer says that they need to lower its universal threshold to nothing and reactivate it to restabilize everything. Lag proceeds to lower the number of universes to be scanned down to one, with no parameters, and reactivates it. It finds an anomaly, located in the sky above Site 322. We're then given the documentation on SCP-8000, stating that it's currently uncontained and is an unidentified entity resembling an elongated harbor seal, estimated to be between 75 to 150 meters in length. Its exact anomalous properties are unknown, but based on eyewitness accounts, it's capable of self-propelled flight via unknown means. Its origin is also unknown, as it disappeared from view soon after its discovery. A Foundation aircraft was deployed to its last known location, only to discover a small, self-repairing, possibly extra-dimensional rift lingering in present reality. It's certainly an article that's going to resonate more with certain people than others, depending on how much you can relate to a character like Lag. Yes, there's definitely silly moments throughout, including the whole thing being anchored around a talking, flying seal, but at its core, it's a story about a man coming to terms with his own expectations of himself. Of course, it's a very personal piece for the author, and that shines through, but the concepts on display here definitely resonate with a large amount of people. Obviously, not everyone is going to have a friendly talking seal take them on a walk down memory lane to help sort out their issues, but the points still apply.